United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. On this episode, we continue with part two of a series with Dr. Duncan Peters we're calling Mythbusters. And this week, Dr. Peters addresses the latest research on saddle pads and how safe joint injections are. He begins by considering whether riders can affect lameness or soundness and how this is changing the way that vets diagnose lameness.
That rider always seems to have lame horses. Can the normal rider cause the horse to be lame? Well, we have to look at these things, don't we? Actually, this is starting to become a hot topic. This and saddle fit. You all know about saddle fit, right? The rider interaction with their horse is going to be the next thing. So just be aware. We all know we have an influence of some kind. This was a research out of Austria where they looked at 20 horses of various training levels, and these horses were jogged in hand to evaluate lameness, and they were put on lunge line. But they had novice riders, experienced dressage riders, and they used films and computer analysis to look at gait, basically gait analysis on these horses, and see, in fact, what they came up with. And then some horses that were lame were actually sound when they were ridden. Okay, some that were sound were lame when they were ridden. We all talk about bridle lamenesses and things like that. And here's the kicker, okay? Probably pretty evident. It was dependent on the level of the rider. The more experienced rider could do things to assist the horse and balance out that gait to some degree. So not earth-shattering, but certainly brings things to light that we can do things to assist our horse, which we probably all are aware of. What does it mean? Well, in terms of the lameness portion of it, that from a veterinarian standpoint, that we may need to explore lamenesses further. You know, a lameness in hand may be different than, when that horse is ridden, or vice versa. We hear a lot that, oh, you can't see something, but when I get on it, you know, certainly I can feel a difference. And so I think more and more veterinarians are taking that to heart. And, watching these horses be ridden, or even veterinarians themselves are getting on horses that have the ability to get a feel for that. And that can be scary, because I tend to do it myself. And we pick the horses we want to get on, though, I'll tell you. Yeah. But also things that have to be considered is different surfaces where we work these horses, how we evaluate the lameness from our standpoint. We talked about riding them, and also talked about, when we evaluate them, when someone's riding the horse, to actually consider the rider as part of that unit, and what are they doing to affect that horse. Is that lameness truly a lameness, or is that lameness related to rider interaction with that horse? And that's a touchy subject from our standpoint, I'll tell you what. That can be something. But as veterinarians, we look at repeatable patterns. Been to barns that I've done work for over and over, and we'll find consistently right-sided lamenesses on horses. Or I'll find that this barn tends to have straight sesamoidian ligament problems, or this barn tend to have a lot of sore suspensories. And so we see repeatable patterns that then, we have to help the barn and trainers and riders sort some of these things out, but can be important along the way. At McPhail Center at MSU, a lot of Dr. Hillary Clayton, who heads that up. We're actually looking more and more into some of these factors with computerized pads. We're using that primarily for saddle fit type of things, and also conformation of horses, looking at different back conformations as to how different saddles will affect that and affect movement. We're looking at positional studies of riders. We're getting riders to lean off to one side on just the model, but we're also doing that in the horse. We have a couple of handicap riders that come and bring their horses, and it's interesting to see what those horses will do underneath those riders to compensate for their disabilities. And we'll see different patterns in those horses in terms of both their movement as well as how they shift their body weight to try to compensate for some of the disabilities. And then we're also looking at the rider in terms of what can that rider do with that disability to try to be more correct on that horse. So we're doing some pretty interesting stuff there, and we're doing a lot of computerized modeling with some of this information we're getting to trying to look at that rider-horse saddle fit sort of interaction. In England, United Kingdom, they're also looking at a lot of these things over there around Newmarket and with the university over there, and using gait analysis and some of the saddle fit and rider positioning studies over there also. So, as I said, I think this is sort of going to be the new hot topic. You know, anyone that goes to a clinic, you know, the clinician, the first thing they do is probably, you know, look at you, how are you sitting, what are you doing here, you need to do this or that. But we all have bad habits. I know any horse I ride is always stiffer to the left. And I guarantee any horse that I'm riding for a while is always going to be stiffer to the left. I know it, you know. Can I fix it? No, I haven't been able to, but that's why I don't do dressage, because I'm not precise enough to be able to do that. But any clinic you go to, as I said, you know, it's sort of a refresher on what are you doing in the middle of that horse and how are you affecting that horse. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen in a two-week time. All these studies take a lot of time, and probably over 10 years we'll have more information. Well, 10 years, holy mackerel, some of us won't be riding as much as we are now, but it's interesting, and we'll all say, oh, I knew that. Yeah, what are they doing that study for? I knew I had to sit in the middle, right?
In the next topic, Dr. Peters discusses the recent research with regard to different types of saddle pads.
Saddle fit right now, as everyone knows, is the big thing. Certainly have the effect on back pain. Again, back pain, neck pain is a big sort of new veterinary area that we're looking at. You guys have been looking at saddle fit for a long time, but now veterinarians are looking at the top part of the horse. You know, it's interesting how that goes around. At one time it was navicular disease, then it moved up to ankle soreness, and then it moved up to suspensory ligaments, or it moved back to hocks, and then it went through stifles, and now boom, we're up at the back of the horse, you know. And so every horse has a back problem now, but we all go through that and we sort of sort through those things. But you know, you guys have been on saddle fit and what's happening for a long time. I'm old enough, I can say it, but you know, no one ever cleans the bottom of their saddle anymore. Anyone clean the bottom of your saddle? Oh my goodness, do you ride them without pads? No, see? But see, I had to clean mine because we rode without pads, you know? Yeah, and the saddle fit the back of the horse. But now we have, you know, 2, 3, 4 pads on there. And I started with the baby diapers, and then went to the beach towels, and then went to the sheepskin, and then, you know, now I've got some fancy pad. I don't know what it is, but it seems to work. I think it still is whether or not I'm sitting in the middle as to whether it works or not. Now, I'm joking a little bit, because saddle fit, certainly the idea is to distribute that pressure over a long part of the back. And we get problems like bridging or pressure at the head plate of the saddle, at the gullet, at the bars, the panels. And we found that flocking material, even within those panels, can have a big difference. Whether it's wool, whether it's air, whether it's a foam type. And it can even put wrinkles in the saddle to causing problems. So it's important. But other factors, the pads improve the pressure distribution in basically correct fitting saddles. That's the whole thing. Some people are putting pads on there because they're going to take a bad fitting saddle and make it better. It doesn't happen, unfortunately. And there are some studies that were done, and in all cases, even with the good fitting saddles supposedly, only 35% of the pads, so a third of the pads, improved or did not negatively affect saddle fit. Okay, so not necessarily helped it, but didn't make it worse. Only a third of them out there. And what was the best? Sheepskin and reindeer fur. Well, I don't know too many reindeer, but reindeer fur. But those were performed probably about the best. some saddles that had a narrow tree. The gel pads would help on some of those saddles. But in fact, gel pad on a supposedly correctly fitting saddle, and that's up for debate. If you ask saddle fitters, that's certainly up for debate, right? You know, on good fitting saddles, gel pads actually tended to concentrate some of that pressure. The other thing that was interesting with a saddle that supposedly don't fit properly is that the usefulness of the pad depended on the gait that the horse was traveling at. I don't know too many of us that are going to hop off and put on a different pad when we go to the sitting trot, you know? I have enough trouble getting on and off once. You know, they talked about cotton pads, sheepskin, natural. They talked about actually synthetic, some of the synthetic sheepskin was not as good. Foam pads, gel pads. Someone brought up a question once when I had this topic about the Western saddles and the wool pads, and they didn't look at wool pads.
And finally, on this week's episode, Dr. Peters addresses the risks involved with joint injections and how to minimize them.
My veterinarian recommended a joint injection for my horse, but I'm concerned because I've heard so many horses get infected joint. What is the risk? And I'm sure a lot of people have had this potentially as a course of therapy, and you know, there is that risk. But there certainly have been some studies looking at injection risk into the joints. And there was an Australian study that looked at racehorses, basically, and 16,000. And the bottom line is that horses are actually more at risk than humans for injection problems, especially into the joints. And the rate was extremely low, one out of basically 1,300. And that's classified extremely low if you even look at it in terms of human epidemiology as to potential problems with that. The question was, or the comment was, that owners doing their own joint injections potentially have more troubles with infections. And that's certainly possible. I'd agree with that, no doubt. The interesting thing about this study, though, was that for a particular veterinarian, you know, looking at vets on the track, one vet would have more than, say, another vet. And that we're looking at probably technique, and so you're probably looking at the same thing in terms of owner. You know, they may not have the same understanding of what's involved in terms of cleaning the area or injecting the area. There have been a number of studies in veterinary medicine that if you inject it into the joint, you don't get into it, and you have to shift the needle around or sort of do more manipulation to get into a joint, like a joint that's harder to get into, there's more risk of an infection occurring. And that's probably just mobilization of stuff that's in there. You know, horses in general certainly have more hair. If anyone's ever gone, you know, in the human hospital to get or a doctor's office to get a joint injection, they just come at you with a little sponge. And the first time I did a lot of dentistry for a while, and I had to have my shoulder done. And I came in, and I was used to injecting joints in horses, and we go 7 minutes, you know, of cleaning them. And you know, that guy came in, say, "How you doing? Yeah, you hurt there. Okay, we're going to inject it. Good." He picks out this sponge and rubs over it and comes at me with a needle, and I backed up to the wall, said, "Hold on here." You know, yeah, and he said, "Oh no, this is how we do it." And I said, "Oh, okay. We were fine." Yeah, it took me back a little bit. But looking at sport horses, another study from a practice in Oklahoma, they did almost 2,000 injections, and they had a very low injection, 2 cases basically out of 2,000. So a very low percentage, again, extremely low in that regard. That's hard to tell if that's technique, you know, or a particular veterinarian with only 2 cases of it there. But horses certainly are at a greater risk than humans. We know that. There's certainly more dirt and bacteria on the skin, certain places for things to hide. The hair, the sweat glands can all trap bacteria and particulate matter, no matter how hard you scrub it. I've actually found that clipped areas can be potentially worse than leaving the hair on. And we don't know why that is for sure. Also, the size of the needle has an effect. And the smaller needle is not necessarily better. like a 22-gauge needle, actually higher incidence than a 20-gauge needle, which is a bigger needle. When you get up to 18s and 16-gauge needles, that which are bigger still, you hope you don't need those. Those are honking needles. But those have increased incidence of infection. But a smaller needle or a smaller gauge needle doesn't necessarily give you less risk. And the thought is that maybe you're taking a smaller chunk and you're actually driving something in along with it. The other thing is the speed at which you put the needle in has an effect. So popping the needle into a joint is less likely to sort of carry stuff in with it. So the other thing is that if you get joint fluid out of the joint that you're injecting, there's a thought that you actually flush any material you may be starting to take in with you from the skin surface. All little things to look over your veterinarian's shoulder when they're doing it now. And also, a lot of cases, the environment that we do these injections. We're doing them sometimes in barns. The guy's, doing the leaf blower down the alleyway there, or, the local lab is coming in, bringing you his big jolly ball to kick around the barn, something like that. A lot of the environmental factors may play a role in what's happening, the wind blowing through the barn and those types of things. And then we've talked about technique, for either particular veterinarians or how you get into the joint or how many times it takes to hit the joint. So sort of the bottom line is the incidence is extremely low of joint injections. The aseptic preparation is essential. They have done a number of studies with, betadine versus chlorhexidine or Novosan versus alcohol or a combination or so on and so forth. And there are, in certain situations, one may be better than the other. But always make sure you have good preparation there and consider the environmental conditions when it's being done. And you always have to balance the benefits versus the risk involved. Anytime a needle's stuck in a joint, there's a risk. And this whole idea of maintenance injections, we're going to go in and inject, eight joints in a horse, that's losing favor, thank God, because, there's really nothing that's been shown that a healthy joint needs to have maintenance in it. So, decreasing that risk. The risk of a joint infection goes down tremendously if you don't inject it. But certainly, looking at the benefits versus the risk, if anyone has apprehension, certainly discuss it, with your veterinarian and come to an understanding there so that everyone feels that you're doing what's best for the horse.
And we'll have the concluding part of this series on next week's episode. This podcast is available on iTunes and at usdf.podbean.com. Visit eTrack, the USDF's online learning center and resource for dressage and equine education, to watch videos from USDF events at usdf.org. The 2014 Adequan USDF Annual Convention, presented by SmartPak, will be held in Cambridge, Massachusetts from Wednesday, December 3rd through Saturday, December 6th. The USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.